Beyond Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast. This is your host, Matt Shook, and this is the episode for Tuesday, January 9th, after the Pistons had a big missed opportunity in the Big Easy. Matt Shook, your host, can be found on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, and another underscore after that, and also the Lockdown Pistons Twitter feed at Lockdown Pistons. I'm tired of asking, so just give me a follow on there. And also, we got a Facebook page now, as I converted my journalist page to one. You can find that at Locked On Pistons-Matt Shook. Give us a like there, and have a little community. Get posting some comments, get some comments from Daniel in Australia a little bit on the Twitter or the Facebook feed there. So join him and let me know what you think about what you hear on here and also what you might want to hear going forward. But you probably want to hear about some more wins, as we will not talk about today, as we will run down the loss on Monday night to the New Orleans Hornets. And then an interview I had earlier today with Chris Herring of 538.com, one of the great young NBA writers out there. We're going to be talking about the man, the myth, the legend, Boban, as he wrote a story that appeared on the 538 ESPN website on Friday. But as you know, sports jerseys are expensive, and the minute that you go out and get one, you know that guy's getting traded soon. Rep the Squad is your answer for all of this. A mail-in jersey subscription service for authentic jerseys, not the cheap ones. It's genius, and Detroit is one of their initial markets. They're supporting the D, and you should be supporting them. Switch between your favorite styles and stars whenever you like. They got Theo Riddick. They got Calvin Johnson platinum jerseys. Andre Drummond in blue, Andre Drummond in white, Reggie, Isaiah Thomas, Grant Hill teal throwbacks. They are all on there. New jerseys arrive fresh and clean at your door in 2 to 3 days. It's like the old Netflix system for authentic jerseys. It's perfect for your kids who are going to grow out of the other ones anyway. So cancel anytime, and it's a great gift idea, as gift subscriptions are also available, and the perfect gift for the sports fan in your life. L-O-C-K-E-D, that is Locked. It's the promo code that you use for 2 weeks free from Rep the Squad. Again, the promo code is Locked, L-O-C-K-E-D, at the website repthesquad.com. Support this podcast and enjoy this fine product, and always Rep the Squad. I want to say thanks to those guys for coming on board as a sponsor with Locked On Pistons as well. But speaking of those Detroit Pistons, they fell 112-109 to the New Orleans Pelicans on the road in Louisiana on Monday night. The Pistons fall to 8-13 on the road in the season, and 21-18 overall on the year. They are now tied with the Milwaukee Bucks, who got spanked by Indiana on Monday night for the sixth spot in the Eastern Conference playoffs, which officially puts the Pistons at the seventh spot, losing the tiebreaker season series so far to them this year. Pistons are now only 1.5 games ahead of Philly as far as staying in the playoff picture overall. Tobias Harris led the way with 25 points, was pretty steady for the Pistons all night. Avery Bradley was horrible in the first half, but mostly very good in the second half, finishing with 24 points, although his final minute is something he'd like to forget, absolutely for sure. Andre Drummond, the center who has missed a couple of the last few games for the Pistons, he was very good, hit a little extra pep in his step, tried maybe a little bit to do too much a couple times offensively against his more talented opponents, and maybe a little bit of natural human nature there to kind of read the hype about the guys like Cousins and Davis he was going up against, and kind of maybe trying to show off a little bit that he could do some of the stuff that those guys can do. A lot of times he actually cannot do those things that those guys can do, but he did have 16 points and 14 rebounds as he played a solid game. And as I mentioned, Avery Bradley, on the game's biggest possession, with the shot clock off and the Pistons down by one, he was trying to draw a foul, but actually put up an awkward 18-footer off of 1 foot, and he actually just missed, but it was just a horrible shot given the circumstances. I think he had Drew Holiday on him. Did kind of a pump fake and thought he got him in the air, so kind of did one of those Joe Dumars, trying to jump into him a little bit, and then got caught up in the air and threw it up. It was just ugly all the way around. It feels like Avery Bradley is a little bit panicky during those game-ending situations, and it seems like a couple times very early on in the season that Stan Van Gundy has drawn up things for him or has trusted AB for whatever reason, and it has not worked out for the most part. Obviously, we know that Reggie Jackson is kind of the guy in the final minute who's going to get those ISO plays, and with him on the shelf, it kind of puts some awkward situations for guys that aren't used to taking and making some of those big shots. But that's where a coach comes in, and he's got to draw up some plays. And then on the final possession, with the Pistons down by 3, 5 seconds left, going for a desperation three-pointer. Stan Van Gundy drew up that final play, and it felt like he was drawing it up for Tobias Harris, who was curling up to the top of the key. But, you know, what happened was the Pelicans did not guard the inbounder on the side, which was Ish Smith, so you kind of had a 4-on-5 situation for the rest of the guys on the court. Ish, you know, he just can't shoot three-pointers, so he pretty much is not an option for he really shouldn't have been on the court at that point. If he's not a guy who's going to shoot or be available to get passed to for wide-open three-pointers, I don't know why he's on the court in a situation where your team is down by 3. You don't really need a point guard with 5 seconds left, so it's not like you have the excuse where you have to have a point guard on the court. I think a guy like Luke Kennard would have been a better option to have on the court at that point, or maybe even Langston Galloway, even though he is obviously not getting minutes for whatever reason in for the Pistons off the bench, was a big free agent acquisition for them and was playing in front of his home crowd in Louisiana. But apparently he is not an option at this point for whatever reason for Stan Van Gundy. So with the Pelicans playing off of Ish, they kind of played zone, switched on screens a little bit easier. Ish had to throw it to Avery Bradley in the corner, who was coming off of everyone was kind of coming off of screens from Andre Drummond, who was standing at the foul line. And Rajon Rondo was waiting for whoever was coming to that side of the court and went over to help on Bradley, did some nice man's defense on him in the corner and knocked him down. And I got to say, for Bradley, for such a tough defender, such a guy who has a hard-nosed reputation and well-earned on the defensive end, he can kind of be pushed around offensively pretty easily, and that was kind of displayed there as Rajon Rondo got the best of him on that exchange and Bradley missed the shot, and that was that. Stan Van Gundy after the game said he wasn't pleased with the defense throughout for the Pistons, although in the fourth quarter down the stretch, the defense did kind of pull them back into the game, and they did look pretty well, pretty good, but it was too little too late on that side of the court. Stanley Johnson missed his fifth game with the injury that he has, the hip, quadricep, and hamstring issues that he has in his core. That's going to be a problem throughout the season, I would imagine, at this point. There's no way that that kind of thing is going to go away unless he misses extended time, and the Pistons need him out there against some of those tough wing players that they go up against night in and night out on the NBA schedule. Stan Van Gundy said he could have played on Monday night, but the way Stan put it, he said he's been off for too much time. So I don't know when you're going to get out there and be ready if you're not going to get any time at all on the court, but maybe we'll see him on Wednesday night against Brooklyn when the Pistons return to action for a game on the road there. And then again on Saturday night in Chicago, finishing up that part of the road trip before one quick trip home for a home game on Martin Luther King Day Monday afternoon for 12:30 game against the Charlotte Hornets. So when you look at Brooklyn, Chicago, and then Charlotte at home, a chance for 3 wins there, but it should be at least 2 wins in that group. But on Monday night, it was too much Anthony Davis for the Pistons. The Pistons and pretty much everyone else has no answer for that guy, and hopefully for his sake, the ankle injury that put him out for the rest of the game in the third quarter isn't too serious. But he had 30 points despite leaving the game with that injury in the third, and that's when Boogie Cousins stepped up. He scored 16 of his 20 points after the injury, largely dominating the fourth quarter after being a non-factor pretty much up until that point. Two all-star big men will do that to you as far as handing off the reins to each other. Rajon Rondo, 12 points and 15 assists. Ishwan Moore, who I told you about on Monday, and maybe Stan Van Gundy missed Monday's episode of Lockdown Pistons, but they did not DM up very well. He had 23 points. Ishwan Moore from Purdue, he is not an all-star this year, and he will never make an all-star team. But if you took the Western Conference all-stars and named those 12 or 13 guys to the team, and then maybe made like a second group of Western Conference all-stars, Ishwan Moore wouldn't quite be on that team. But maybe if you made like a third, probably like a fourth group of Western Conference all-stars, he might be on there. And I know that sounds like a backhanded compliment, but I mean that in a sincere way to the former Big Ten player who's really blossomed his career in New Orleans after being kind of a journeyman with Orlando, Boston, and Chicago before signing a nice free agent deal with New Orleans. They saw something in him, and he's been delivering in the 2 years that he's been down in Louisiana. But that team, that really is a team that's perfect for New Orleans, isn't it? At least that was my experience when I went to New Orleans for the first time last year. It's a pretty exciting team. You never really know what's going to happen, but at the end of the day, it's probably not going to go too good because, you know, the Bourbon Street, all the drinking and partying you do in New Orleans, and that team, it's talented, it's a flash in the pan, it's something that you'll never forget, but I just don't see how this ends with anything other than some, innocent playoff berths and things like, first round exits and things like that. It's just a lot of talent out there, but I just don't know how Elvin Gentry is going to make those guys good in the long run. I can see Boogie Cousins moving on to another team at some point and trying to give him another experiment in another situation before, you know, that team has any ultimate long-term success. And doesn't it look like Boogie Cousins is about to cry like all the time on the court? It looks like he's about to have like a complete nervous breakdown. He had the early fouls and threw the water bottle down on the floor on the bench, interrupting the game when he was upset about that. That's what it must be like to be such a talented person like he is, to have the organization just put up with you despite all the issues that he can cause the team with his immaturity and emotional behavior. Most of us in the real world will never be in a position where your ability is so revered and necessary that you can kind of do whatever you want to do. And I say that with complete reverence about Boogie. He's definitely a sight to watch, his talent and his ability to take over games, sometimes entire games, and really certainly in the fourth quarter for the Pelicans, as he was great down the stretch for them. But man, like I said, not a guy that you want to go to war with day in and day out, as he's I hesitate to use the cancer, the C word, too often, but I just don't see Boogie being in a long-term winning situation anytime soon. But we'll get to the reason that you're probably listening to this podcast, and that's my interview with Chris Herring coming up here. He's of 538.com, but he joined us here on Locked On Pistons. We'll have that in a second. But if your company is interested in men between the ages of 18 and 44, then your company should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Pistons is listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 to 44. So if you want men 18 to 44, this is your spot. Plus, our rates are reasonable. So email me at Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more. Yes, sir! And now we are joined on Locked On Pistons by Chris Herring of 538.com, which is Nate Silver's statistical-based ESPN site. Chris covers the NBA for 538.com, a former Wall Street Journal reporter as well, and a University of Michigan grad. So, Chris, thanks for joining us on Locked On Pistons.
No problem at all, man. Thanks for having me on.
Now, Chris had a story on Friday that published on 538.com about Boban Marjanovic, the Pistons' backup center, I guess the third-string center right now. And the article is titled, "Why the Most Efficient Scorer in NBA History is Stuck on the Bench." So let's start with Boban's offense and how efficient of a scorer he is. When you looked at the numbers, Chris, what did you find there?
Well, basically, I mean, depending on how far you go back, he basically has the best true shooting percentage of anybody who played at least 100 games in their career, crossed the 100-game threshold. I think with his last two or three games, he crossed that threshold and, it's barely taken, I don't even think it's taken 600 shots in his career yet. So obviously we're looking at someone who really hasn't played a whole lot, in terms of he's been in the league for 3 years, but just now playing 100 games. When most guys play, three quarters of that within their first full season. So there are reasons that he's not on the court. And that was kind of the point of the story. He doesn't really get enough minutes to be seen as an elite scorer. And the irony is that I went to a couple Pistons games the last few days to kind of, get my interview with him. Didn't even really occur to me that they just happened to be playing the Spurs. And I was like, oh, this works perfectly. I can go ask Pop about this as well. And it becomes very clear to you very quickly why it is that Boban doesn't see more minutes. And I was at the Miami game and, lo and behold, Boban gets to start and I'm sitting there messaging with my editor saying, I wonder if the thrust of the story still works, if he's getting the start all of a sudden. And then, he gets the start and he plays well offensively, but, on the defensive end, just is not in a position to really defend when Kelly Olynyk is at the five. And so you saw right away kind of the drawbacks of having him get big minutes or kind of in a big role, even as a backup big, that he just doesn't really fit very well against certain teams and certain players. And I think that's what Stan had been trying to tell me all week. And obviously I knew that to some extent from having watched film and having seen highlights of him, but getting to see it up close and getting to see it in the midst of an 8-0 run and having to pull him off the floor and having to call a timeout to pull him off the floor, it becomes immediately clear why it is that he can't play more than he does.
Yeah, you mentioned that defense, that maybe he, when a Whiteside type is on the court, that maybe he can play a little bit defensively, but then you have a shooter like Olynyk who you got to get out and extend your defense a little bit against. He's not able to get out there. Now, is there
Is it really just that simple that if you have a guy who can stretch the floor and run a lot of pick and roll that Boban can't get out there? And then if you have, you know, traditional type of center, which obviously there's only a couple or a few left in the league anymore at this point, is it really that simple at this point? Or is there a way that you think that Stan Van Gundy can coach around this? Or is that just kind of the way it's going to be for Boban, especially, you know, for the foreseeable future?
I mean, there are probably some ways around it, but it probably requires taking a time out to really figure out who you're going to put on someone else in the interim. So in that situation, maybe you try to put Tobias Harris on Kelly Olynyk instead, which that's a little bit of a tough matchup. I'm sure they would probably go down into the post to him if they felt like they could get that matchup. But something else just to try to switch the assignment so that Boban's not getting switched on to someone that he can't guard or that he can't get to. Now, sometimes I think he probably could play a little bit better than he does. You look at that play where the timeout was called, and I think all that happened was that the Pistons missed a shot. Boban came down in transition, and he's so used to guarding guys his own size that he didn't think to basically take the trailer, who was Olynyk in that situation. And so some of it is just lack of awareness, and I know that's kind of one of the knocks on big men in general, is that they're not thinking quite as quickly as a Chris Paul or Reggie Jackson or anyone like that. So some of it I think he could improve on if he knew to be looking for those things, but it's just not his speed. And I think it would probably require setting up kind of a preordained cross match before, like I said, with Tobias Harris or someone else in the lineup.
Now, you mentioned some of these plays from the Miami game, and some of those are video clips that you have inside your story on 538.com, and we'll send out the links to our listeners on our platforms as well. So Herring is joining us here on Locked On Pistons. You can find him on Twitter at Herring_NBA. And also he does the Lab podcast with some of the other 538 guys. A great listen for the basketball fan who's looking to up their game in terms of basketball intelligence. Now, speaking of some of your ESPN colleague, Woj, Adrian Wojnarowski, had a report today on Monday that the Pistons have been very active on the trade market. It sounds like Stan Van Gundy hoping to win now with this group as presently constructed and trying to tweak it a little bit. Do you think, Chris, that the Pistons are maybe the team that more resembled the first 6 weeks of the season when they were one of the hottest stories in the NBA, or the Pistons from late November, early December when they kind of went on this swoon? A lot of it's schedule-based, but where do you think this team is headed right now as 2018 gets kind of going?
Well, I think a lot of it, like you said, is schedule-based, but I think a big chunk of it, too, they're hard to peg at this point just because so much of it, you would think some of these struggles have been injury-related, too. You know, the game I went to, there was no Reggie Jackson. There was no Avery Bradley for that Spurs game, which they won anyway. A couple nights later, obviously, against Miami, they struggled down the stretch and lost that game, and Drummond didn't play there, and so they're just – obviously Stanley Johnson, too, is someone else who hasn't been playing regularly at least. And so just trying to get everybody back into the lineup is a big priority for them. And it makes me wonder, if they're fully healthy, do they need – how many trades do they really need to make, or is it something that they really have to do? If they had a full deck of people available to play, then, you know, they might look more like the team we saw at the beginning of the season. They go really hot and cold. But the one thing that I would say about them so far is that they've looked really good when certain guys are humming. Some of their young guys, really, Reggie Bullock, Luke Kennard has had a couple of breakout games. And so it would make me a little bit reluctant to make trades. I know there's probably a ton of pressure on Stan because this is his show. And, you know, they've made the playoffs once. But you, at some point, you kind of have to start consistently making it, or else, you know, the likelihood of him getting title stripped or of him you know, eventually losing his job, I think that comes into play. And I think if they can stay close and hang tight, make the playoffs, I think that pressure kind of subsides just for at least another year as far as his title goes, and whether or not he needs to just focus on just coaching or whether he can still hold the front office role as well.
And the Pistons looking ahead to this weekend, and I know that you're based in Chicago and grew up here as well. The Pistons have the Bulls for the first time this season. Somehow they haven't played yet, and that's kind of a schedule anomaly, but you've been following the Bulls probably your whole life. Now, what's they've been gotten a little bit of a winning streak lately. They've been one of the hottest teams really in the NBA for a stretch there and had that long winning streak as well. What's going on with them, and what's the change with the Bulls, and what are the Pistons have to look out for this weekend?
They've come down to earth just a little bit. I think they played a lot of games this past week. I think they're 1-4 over the last week. They've had a lot of close games lately, and so they had the big winning streak. Even the games that they lost in the midst of that stretch, I think they lost the one to Cleveland. So they've been just so much more competitive lately. And obviously they had I think it was a 7-game win streak after a 10-game losing streak. First time in NBA history a team had ever gone on a win streak of 5 or more after dropping 10 in a row. And really a lot of it was that they got more healthy as well. Mirotić was back in the lineup. I think that's what most people attributed that to. I think that's a little bit strong to say that. He wasn't the only guy. Portis had been injured as well. Chris Dunn had seemed to get a lot more comfortable in a starting role for them. And really, I've said this, and it's kind of the nerdy answer, but David Nwaba off the bench for them had just been such a catalyst. You look at the biggest shift for them from the beginning of the season to the middle of the season, and it really was the fact that their pace picked up from something like 24th to second in the league during that winning streak. And this is just a team that struggles to score. They don't have guys out there that are known as scorers. That's what they're hoping to get now in Zach LaVine as he comes back from injury, maybe this weekend against the Pistons. But without a guy like that in your lineup, and with Mirotić really being your go-to guy offensively, probably the worst go-to guy in the league from an offensive standpoint, when that's your issue, you've got to try to find baskets quicker. And so Nwaba was able to do that. When I wrote my story, a longer story about the Bulls, I basically pointed out that he had the highest transition rate in the league. I think he was at 32% of his offense was coming from transition. And at the time, he was actually shooting, I think, 57 or 58% and was on pace at the time to become the first guard 6'5 or shorter to shoot 55% in a season from the field since John Stockton in the 1980s. And so just some really rare attributes that he brings to the table. He defends well, actually guarded Giannis for chunks of the game where he gave Giannis real problems, and they beat the Bucks twice in, a 4 or 5-game stretch. And so, I mean, they're just more competitive now. I think teams probably do take them a little bit lightly, given who's on the roster, who's not on the roster. But the Bulls just play really hard, and they kind of keep coming at you and keep coming at you. The effort is there, and they have some guys that can play that are talented, and I think are just kind of now finding out how to put it all together.
Yeah, I'll back you up on Nwaba. I covered the game against the 76ers that the Bulls had recently, and not only is Mirotić out there like Dennis Rodman making plays, rebounding, defending, and it was an unbelievable sight to see of Mirotić making those plays, but you can really tell when Nwaba's out there about the difference that he makes to kind of get things going for that team. Now, I know you're a Michigan grad, too, so I can't let you off the hook with all of our Detroit-based and Michigan-based listeners here. Jim Harbaugh, of course, we got to bring up the Michigan football program. Had the tough loss to South Carolina, another tough way to end the season, like these last few years have gone. Where do you think this program's at? And it should be one of his more talented teams going forward if they can figure out the quarterback position. Is that pretty much where you stand with the Wolverines right now?
Yeah, and it just felt a little as angry as I think a lot of us were after that bowl game. It feels a little premature to really complain too much. With the way this bowl game went and several other games this year, the Michigan State game, it basically felt like a season where they had 8.5 wins or so, pretty much right in between the 8 and 9 win projection that I guess I would have had for them before the season. And that was thinking that their defense would really take some time to do some growing up. Their defense was good all year. The offense ended up being the bigger problem. And, I mean, if you told yourself that Michigan would lose their starting quarterback to injury, that they would basically lose, their permanent backup to injury at a certain point, too, which is what happened with Peters, and that they'd be stuck with John O'Korn, who played as poorly as he did, the 5 turnovers in a 3-point game against Michigan State at home in the rain. I mean, this is kind of what you would have expected. Now, the bowl game was disappointing because of the way it played out and the momentum shift that happened in that game. But really, if you could plug in a quarterback with that defense, which it's a lot easier said than done, Jay Patterson, I think there was a reason that people were pretty excited about him. He has a good reputation, whether it's him, if it's Peters, with a little bit more experience and seasoning next year. I'm optimistic that they're not that far away. I don't think it's easy to put together the sorts of defenses they have and the way that they've reloaded defensively. I trust Harbaugh offensively to figure it out once he gets a quarterback. And so I think if they don't have a quarterback ready to do that next year, then I think the drumbeat starts to sound a little bit louder as far as Harbaugh. But my fear in all this is that if we do kind of reach a conclusion that Harbaugh is not the person to revive the program, can the program really be revived to where it was 15 or 20 years ago? And if it can't, then that's a much bigger problem anyway. But who are you really going to bring in that that is a more of a known commodity than Jim Harbaugh as far as a good coach, as far as the exposure, whether you like him or not? He has them on the map, and he has Michigan being talked about constantly. And so I tend to still kind of side with them at this point. I guess that could change next year if it's a horrendous year. But if that's the case, I think I have bigger questions than just Jim Harbaugh at that point.
Yeah, but looking ahead, you get those big defensive ends coming back next year. You got Bush, one of the best linebackers in the country, coming back next year as well. A lot of reason for optimism in Ann Arbor next fall, I got to believe. But Chris, is there anything else that we can be looking from you for these next couple weeks, some things that you're working on for the site?
Just one story, hopefully this week. Probably on a player out west who just gets whacked in the face more than anyone I've seen. I guess I won't say exactly who, but basically trying to figure out ways to kind of parse out a number. I always like to kind of have one really big surprising number. Obviously with Bovon, it was the idea that he's, you know, technically the most efficient scorer in league history. And then, you know, kind of juxtaposing that with the idea that he's not on the court as much as you would think someone who's the most efficient scorer in history should be. But, you know, stories like that where you've got one really surprising number, interesting number, and trying to kind of navigate my way through some of the research for that now about a player who just by every metric just gets drilled, consistently gets hit all the time, and why that is, how that is, and how he goes about trying to play through it. So doing that later this week, and hopefully Wednesday or Thursday we'll have a story out on that.
Well, Chris Herring, there's so much good, smart NBA reporting out there right now, and yours is among the best of it. And I encourage all the Locked On Pistons listeners to follow you on Twitter at Herring_NBA. Also to read on 538 of Chris's work and all the other guys that do the sports coverage for Nate Silver's site. Chris, I want to thank you for taking the time out today to talk about Boban and Harbaugh and the Bulls and all that other stuff. So thanks again. And anything else that you want to add for listeners?
Not at all. Not at all. I hope that the Pistons continue to kind of fight through it. And I think they're impressively strong team. And I actually tweeted a couple days ago that every single time I sit down to watch them, probably once, you know, once, maybe twice a week, they always seem to play well whenever I watch on League Pass. And people took me seriously when I said, I basically said they look like the best team to ever play whenever I'm watching a game, and people came into my mentions seriously, do you not ever watch the Warriors? And I'm like, I watch the Warriors probably more than anybody, you know, that I get to sit down and watch. But for whatever reason, the Pistons, whether I'm there in person more often than not, or, you know, just watching a game on television, but they've looked good, even in games where you wouldn't expect them to necessarily, they've looked good. So I'm curious to see what they can do once they've got everybody back healthy. I know it'll be a while before that's the case, but, you know, I like Stan, and I watching Drummond, they just look different. He looks a lot better offensively this year, more comfortable. The assist numbers are way, way up for him. So I think fans should be somewhat encouraged by all that.
And I think fans should definitely get into Chris's mentions and remind him when the Pistons are on so he can get him on the screen, and then we can definitely get some wins out of that. But, Chris, thanks for taking the time.
No problem at all, man. Thank you.
Special thanks to the great Chris Herring of 538.com for taking the time on the interview there. But remember, rep the squad. Use the promo code LOCKED for 2 weeks free of the Authentic Jersey subscription service. Do this. Tweet pictures at me of your new jersey. We'll retweet those using the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. And also use the hashtag rep the squad so the guys from Rep the Squad up in Seattle can see you repping your jersey as well. But Wednesday's podcast, we'll be looking ahead to Wednesday night's game at Brooklyn against the resurgent Nets. And you know what? Maybe we'll even talk about LaVar Ball a little bit, everyone's favorite topic, as Stan Van Gundy has kind of waded into that newsworthy topic so there recently. And so it's now a Locked On Pistons issue that we'll be talking about. I got another interview later in the week that I'm excited about as well, and we'll learn something about
Pistons history together. Go ahead and follow the Locked On NBA Network Twitter handle at Locked On NBA Net. Also, check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons Matt Shook for that Facebook page. Give it a like, and we'll keep you up to date on everything and all the new episodes as well. But thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll talk to you again soon.